Glenn Cook is the author of dozens of fantasy and science fiction novels, but is perhaps best known for his epic fantasy series, The Black Company. The newest book in his Dread Empire series will be published in early 2012, after a nearly 25-year break between novels.
All right, we are here at Mile High Con with Mr. Glenn Cook. The newest work, A Path to Coldness at Heart, and that's going to be released in January, I saw. I believe
that's right.
The conclusion to the Dread Empire saga. Would you mind telling us just a little bit about the premise and kind of what readers can expect from it?
Well, originally, when I first started writing the Dread Empire books back in about the time Sherman was marching through Georgia,
approximately,
I planned to do 14 books, of which 12 would be novels and 2 would be collections of stories set in the universe. After I had done the seventh book, I started doing The Black Company, and The Black Company was far, far more successful, commercially, if not critically. So I abandoned it pretty much, although I had about 90% of the next book done and about 15-20% of the book after that done. And in those days, my wife and I used to have local fans in all the time for parties. Once a year, we'd have a big party. We'd have 100, 150 people in. We'd have people turn up that were at the wrong party and stuff. That was pretty funny.
Well, they didn't think they were at the wrong.
These four guys that were in there wandering around, couldn't figure out why they didn't know anybody, drinking the booze and whatnot. And all of a sudden, they realized they were in the right house number, but on the wrong street.
Oh,
they belonged one block over, and they got all embarrassed and left some booze behind.
Yeah, compensation there.
Yeah, there you go.
But anyway, the point was that at the last one of those parties we had, one of the many, many people who were there got into my files, wanted to know what was going on in the future in the series, and stole all of the material having to do with the next two books.
Oh.
I've got, in my files right now, I have one page of one book, page 142.
They missed
a carbon copy of page 142, and that's all I had.
So you were working on a typewriter in those days? And that was
I did then,
yeah,
in
so
those
that was
days.
All, that was it, that was even the only
now,
manuscript.
Even now, my first drafts I do longhand.
Oh,
but
wow.
I was using a Royal, doesn't matter. I have had so many typewriters. It's probably
See, I would enjoy this conversation as someone who loves old typewriters.
Probably an IBM Selectric at that time.
Yeah, it's a fine typewriter.
So that was all stolen. And later on, when Nightshade Books bought my entire backlist to bring it out, one of the things they wanted me to do was write, pick that up and continue. And, you know, and I made my excuses, said, you know, I haven't got a clue. All I have some vague memories of what was supposed to happen because that was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And we hum-hawed around. And finally they said they weren't going to publish a couple of the books if I didn't write this other book. They kind of twisted my
leverage,
arm.
Yeah.
Write at least one book to wrap it up. So what I did was wrote the book, Path to Coldness of Heart, which is actually covers what would have been four books in the original planned series.
Oh, wow.
Wraps up, it wraps up pretty much what's going on with most of the main characters, but it also ends up with, as all of my books do, with foreshadowing of what would happen in the future.
Yeah.
Was it a good sense of emotional closure to finally be able to, you know, put the period at the end of the sentence that was started, you know, so many decades ago?
You know, I don't think so. I really would have liked to have written what I originally intended to write. But I'm realist enough to know that if publishers can't sell the books to people, they're not going to buy them from me, so I have to do what...
There's a lot of pressure from the publisher to you know, put out this last book. Over that span of time, were there fans that were clamoring that just wanted to know what were happening to these characters as well?
I did hear occasionally from a number of people, but the books have never... They were popular with other writers. You know, I guess there are certain writers that do things that other writers really appreciate, but they're not themselves hugely commercially successful. One of my favorites is Jack Vance, who has gotten a lot of recognition and a lot of writers love him, but he's never really that successful as a commercial writer. And I think that series, I've had any number of writers say, oh, I found the first book, or I found this book, and I went on eBay and spent ridiculous amounts of money to get all the rest of them to see what you were doing. And so they, only one of them, of the seven that were actually published so far, were a commercial success the first time they were around.
Gotcha.
And that was a book that was the second half of what originally was written as one book, but published by two different publishers.
Oh, wow.
You had to have read the first book, which only sold a handful of copies, in order to understand what was going on in the second book, which sold almost 10 times as many.
Wow.
But it had a beautiful cover.
Do you think covers play a pretty big role then?
Oh, they play a huge role. I've had an awful lot of covers that I just absolutely hate. They go out
don't
there.
Have a lot of control over that?
Yeah, everybody tells me, oh God, these Michaels, not Michaels, well, I can't remember what the guy's name is. It does almost every one of my covers now. Mm-hmm. I don't like any of them.
Have you told him that? Have you met him? And...
I've never met him.
Oh, okay. No, that's funny.
They have nothing to do with the book. They look nothing like the characters or anything.
Yeah, they help sales, though.
But they sell. Yeah, they
go.
Sell the books.
Yeah.
So
go.
I'm on board with that aspect.
Right.
The covers that I've had that I really like are by an artist named Graffette Didier in France, who's done... I think the man is a genius, and he's like he's reading my mind when he does the cover art and interior art and stuff for the French editions of the books.
And do they ask you for a little bit of input? Do they, you know, kind of ask you to give them a premise on what the book's going to be and then go from there? Or do they just go?
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
I have talked to, in fact, I did a, well, it came out as a trilogy. It was written as one book. It was called Dark War as one book, and it came out as a trilogy with... three one-word titles that I don't recall right offhand back in the 80s. And the artist who did the covers for those I spoke to at one time, probably 5 or 6 years after they came out, and he said that he was told what he was going to paint. They gave him a two-sentence thing of what each cover was going to be. And none of the covers had much of anything to do with the books.
Sure.
But they did manage to get a naked woman in each one.
Well, yeah, that's even though copies. Yeah.
Even though the character in the book was a female wolf, they managed.
This explains so much about some of the paperbacks that I
managed to get a naked woman with pointy ears.
Yeah.
And he said he was doing a series of presentations at conventions on the East Coast on how art directors abort the author's vision and the artist's vision and whatnot, using those paintings and trusting that most of the people in his audience would be familiar enough with the books to know that what he had there was nothing to do with those.
So now throughout most of your writing career, you were working for GM, correct?
Up through 1994. I took an early took an early retirement package in 1994, so since then I've been theoretically a full-time writer and producing about a third of what I did when I had little kids and was working 12 hours a day and had little kids in Little League and all that kind of stuff, because now I don't have to budget my time. You know?
Yeah, so I mean, it's just a question of enjoying your time now in retirement, and when you were working full-time, it was just you made sure you time.
Yeah, well, I didn't watch TV at all in those days. I missed, there's whole television series that I completely missed and never even heard of, because in those days I didn't watch TV. You know, I went to work and I worked anywhere from 8 to 13 hours a day and sometimes had Sunday off. I came home, I would sleep. If I had free time, I would write. I did do a lot of my writing at work, because I usually had a job where I could do, I had enough downtime on the job that I could do a little writing. And
Does GM know this?
Oh, yeah. At one point when I was working on, we made, for about 9 years, I was working on a line where we made custom, basically custom ordered pickup trucks for the Army and for railroads and things like that. And I did a job that was so filthy and so unpleasant and whatnot that anything I wanted to do, as long as I showed up for work and did my job, was fine with the company. And I had usually anywhere from 13 to like 28 seconds in a cycle where I was doing nothing but standing there, and I could write a few words at a time.
Wow.
And I could think about it enough so that what I hand wrote, all I had to do was take it home and type it up, and it was ready to go.
That's amazing. And yet you never lost your train of thought in those 30-second, you know,
spans?
Oh,
no, because once you had the muscle memory and whatnot, it was such a mindless job that all you had to do was, you know, kind of glance up the road, and you knew what you're going to be doing on the next job, and you did it, and without even thinking about it, you know, and just muscle memory and whatnot was just automatic, and thinking all the time about what was going to go down next. And I was doing 3 books a year on that job.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Now, I've heard a lot of fans and critics say that your dialogue in your books sounds like the way people talk. Do you think actually having a regular job as opposed to being a full-time writer informed just listening to the way people would talk?
Especially in the early Black Company books. I mean, all those guys are guys I knew, and they talk that way. And even the game that they're always playing, we used to play at work, a game called Tonk, which I've only ever, outside of our plant, run into one person who'd ever even heard of it. And it's called something else. And apparently it was played quite commonly in the German Army during World War II, but because it's such a simple-minded, rummy kind of game, you can play a whole hand of it in a matter of seconds. You know?
Gotcha. It's a perfect thing to get you down to.
But just the way guys talk to each other, everybody I knew in the service pretty much was that way. They had this same kind of attitude toward authority and toward, you know, giving one another a hard time all the time and whatnot.
And do you think that's why the characters in the Black Company series ended up being, you know, sort of mercenary types, or, you know, the bad guys, if you will?
Well, when I started out writing those books, I wanted to write. I had this notion that somebody ought to write a book from the viewpoint of the guys that do the dirty work for Sauron and Mordor.
You know, yeah.
Somebody, mm-hmm. you know, he's got tens of thousands of people out there stuff. Now, do they even have a choice? Well, medieval mercenaries, for the most part, those folks really didn't have a choice. It was the only work they could find. It was either that or starve.
Yeah. Right.
So somebody would feed you for going around raping and pillaging and whatnot, your next door neighbor. Well, you know, you got to eat. So.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I wanted to write from that viewpoint, and when I started writing, I just wrote most of the characters, or as I say, early on, are people I knew in the service. There are one or two characters like Raven, who, not somebody I knew, not somebody I'd even want to know, a character who was very popular with teenage boys because he didn't put up with any crap. You know, people dissed him, he killed them. You know, he cut their throat or something. Or other. I had to go to great lengths in one book, I thought, or I felt obligated to point out that the man was psychotic, that he was dying.
Just in case anyone didn't notice.
Yeah, you don't want to be like this guy. You'll end up, it'll be Columbine, you know, or right, Columbine. Right. Or
going on a different role here, I've read in some interviews before that you've got a couple of secret vices, like Power Rangers and Inuyasha.
Oh, I'm
long past
I'm
those.
Off of Power Rangers now, mainly because it's not on anymore.
Yeah. That's the question.
Do you have any other secret vices that you'd like to admit to the world?
I'm totally hooked on anime right now.
Really?
And I can afford it, so I go through You know, a friend of mine, or not a friend, an acquaintance of mine has a shirt he occasionally wears which says, anime, like crack, only more expensive.
And do you do the subtitles, or do you prefer dubs?
I prefer dubs, but I, you know, a lot of it's only available with subtitles. I don't speak Japanese, although I, after watching so much of it, I'm beginning to pick up a few words. And, my middle son went to school in Japan for a short time anyway. And he speaks a little Japanese. Of course, he's, my two youngest sons are the kind of linguistic geniuses who hang out with people that speak the language, and 2 weeks later they're speaking it like they were born there.
Lifetime traveler, it's got to be.
Yeah.
So what are you watching now?
Right now, the one I have up in my room that I brought with me is one called Onigami, which I watched the first... I finished watching all of those last night. I'm waiting, eager to see the next half of the series when it comes out. And Spice and Wolf 2 right now is the one that's in the machine that I brought with me. I don't go in much for giant robots and horror ones, or very much for ninja assassin type things, or live action one. I've got a couple of live action ones that I bought just because the catalog made them sound like this sounds so strange that I think
I had to see what was going on there.
Yeah, some called Machine Girl, which she's got a rotary
gun
for a right hand. Sounds pretty much like a silly thing where the American one where the girl has an M16 for
right leg. Like Death Proof. It was the other one. Doesn't matter.
One of the
one of those. Grindhouse.
Are these influencing your writing at all? Any of these?
In my Garrett series, the book that I'm doing right now is mildly influenced by anime. I've got a couple of things that I've seen in anime that I thought were such cool ideas that I've borrowed them. But I do that in every one of the Garrett books, just about. I borrow something usually from American mystery writers, but I borrow something from them and try to put my own unique spin on it by setting it in a world where magic works and you're up to your hips and elves and dwarves and unpleasant gods and all kinds of stuff like that.
When's the next Garrett book coming out?
I don't know.
Whenever the publisher says it's been
submitted. 429 in the first draft, so plus whatever handwritten I wrote out in the lobby this morning.
You're always working then?
I'm always working, yeah. I brought this with me, and you know, I'll work on 5 or 10 pages, and then I'll take an anime break or something. Or last night, get my heart broken watching the World Series. But
sorry to hear it.
Actually should be used to it after this season, but...
So you're pretty well known for being undercover at conventions, if you will, you know, pretending like you're not Glenn Cook, like you're just, you know, just kind of an average guy. Which is very commendable.
I don't go undercover. You know, as far as I'm concerned, I'm just another fan at the convention. You know, here I'll probably... Well, they got me on so many things that I'll be guest of honoring at least some. I had most conventions I go to, I am a book dealer at. I thought I was going to be one here too, but it hasn't worked out so far. They still haven't figured out how to do with me a table yet.
Oh, really?
I brought copies of all my books in various editions, including most of the foreign language ones. And we're going to put them out. We'll see. They say they're going to put me next to the autograph table now.
There you go. Do you usually do pretty well in sales at the conventions? Is that a good opportunity for you?
I sell all kinds of books. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a general bookseller at most conventions that I go to. But my own books make up probably about 30-40% of the total sales.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that I've written that's just not generally available.
Right. I noticed in interviews you seem to put a lot of pride on how many of your works are still in print.
I'm really excited that Nightshade picked up almost my entire backlist. There's only
great,
a couple
yeah.
things that they haven't reprinted or are not going to reprint eventually.
So. And they're mostly, yeah. are they doing omnibuses of a lot of the Dread Empires where it's a couple
They did omnibuses of the first two, and then the trilogy that was published first, they did as one omnibus, and they did some fancy editions and hardcover and trade paperback and whatnot. And then they did the same with the first two, but they've decided with the final three, before they do that, they're going to publish them as individual books, and then later on do an omnibus edition. At least that's my understanding.
Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about, that you wanted to promote, anything your readers might be interested in that they might not yet be aware of?
Well, I am working slowly on a new Black Company book, the first two sections of which have been published as short stories in a book called Swords and Dark Magic and a book entitled Dark Fantasies 2, I think, which is only a limited edition from Subterranean Press. I know that one of the book dealers here said that she had 6 copies of it that she brought it. But
all right.
That's the first 20% or so of the
yeah.
of a Black Company novel that will take place between the first two that have already been published. And let's see, then there's a book that was supposed to have come out on October the 3rd, but I haven't seen, don't know what the story is on it. The collection of all my short fiction that not Dread Empire related, and there's not very many of them. No, I just never wrote a lot of short stories.
Right.
I've done a few in the last couple of years, but those are not eligible to be included in any collections because they're
still too new.
Still too new.
Yeah.
There's one in a Jack Vance honorarium book called Songs of the Dying Earth, and then there's one that just came out. It's a Garrett short piece that's, well, it's, I had a lot of fun with it because really what it is a spoof of the movie version of the Maltese Falcon.
Oh, okay. And, very fun, yeah.
The Maltese Falcon as a movie is almost identical to the book. It's probably the most faithful adaptation I've ever seen of a book. But I've already done The Maltese Falcon as a Garrett novel, and I did that one based pretty much on what Hammett did, or at least tried to. It's an homage to Hammett.
Yeah.
I mean, 9 out of 10 people who read the book don't even see the connection.
Right. Very fun.
The connection with the short story and the movie is probably not obvious either, unless you know all the characters are named after the actors.
Oh,
who played that particular role,
yeah.
you know. And the sexes have changed on, you know, the Sydney Greenstreet character is now a woman, and the Elisha Cook character is now a girl. And
excellent. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.